season. Welcome to the weekly playoff NFL Fantasy Live podcast. We take a look at what's going on this week and how it affects your fantasy team for this year and beyond. We'll break down the playoffs, how everybody's doing in the big playoff challenge. I know Adam Rank is doing very well. Marcus, I know you're doing well. I know I'm not doing well. So I'm just going to say, how are you guys doing?
Wait a minute. So what was your strategy? What team did you... You went the Bengals?
I went the Bengals, and so that didn't work out for me.
You're familiar with how the Bengals play playoff football,
correct? You know what? They're on my never again list, right? At tequila after 2 a.m., drafting C.J. Spiller, Cincinnati Bengals. So they're off my list. Then I decided...
If they go 16-0 next year, you would still be like, nope.
Nope, they're going to lose first game they play, whoever they play. They're out. So then I decided for playoff challenge on NFL.com, which we've been talking about here in the podcast the last couple weeks, great way to play fantasy throughout the end of the regular season. I thought, okay, I have to go with a team that nobody else is picking because that's my only way to gain points the rest of the way. And right. Everybody's picking 49ers and people are picking Seahawks and Broncos. So I had to go all in on the Chargers. So I went Chargers all the way down the row and now I'm picking a new team again.
You're now it's like you're like the guy who walked up to the roulette table and you're like, I want 100 on black and then it's red. And you're like, I want 100 on double zero. Like, you went completely crazy. Like, the one that's totally not going to hit.
Yeah, I'm going to come in dead last in the playoff challenge.
But that's I like the spirit, though. You went for it. And now you don't have to worry about it. We still have to sit here and suffer over our teams and worry about it. You're at home. You're like the Bengals now.
That's right.
You're at home.
Except I didn't throw four picks and people aren't saying they want to replace me.
You might lose a couple of coordinators, but that's okay.
So where are you? What'd you wind up taking?
I did all 49ers.
You did all 49ers, right? Because you said you were going to do that. Okay.
I did. I left one running back spot open. I filled it with Eddie Lacy in the first week. And then just because I'm like, I want at least one guy in the second round. What I should have done is just waited for Marshawn Lynch and gotten double points from him. But gotten Marshawn Lynch, and now I'll have Marshawn Lynch going up against the 49ers this week. So hopefully I will have to replace that running back. But all right, I'll go with it. We'll see if the 49ers keep rolling. I might have a shot.
Yeah, that you know, it's you got to pick the right team. Yeah, if you're going to pick that team in the first round, the pressure, because it's really all or nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing that first round game and it's crazy and things can happen and sometimes it, you know, just doesn't work out at all. So I now that I know. Now, Marcus, where'd you go with yours?
I went mostly Broncos with a couple of Seahawks sprinkled in. So I took a chance that we'll get the rare and elusive 2-1 seed showing up in the Super Bowl, which I know almost never ever happens. But I figure I'd take a chance on it. You know, I went mostly Bronco heavy because I figure they score the most points. I mean, I'm not trying to overthink this. They score a lot of points, so I went with those teams. We'll see how it happens. Now, chances are I could get both these teams in, and I could have, you know, Peyton Manning and Marshawn Lynch and all these guys, or I could have no teams in which case Adam Rank is sitting pretty and pretty much runs away with this thing.
Well, you're the guy who picks all the number one seeds in your March Madness.
I am. I go 4-1
seeds. I just go chalk all the way down.
All the way.
Well, you were the one that really started the trend of that because you went with the Giants, right? The first year we did Playoff Challenge,
right.
When they went all the way to the Super Bowl, they got in at 9-7, and everybody said, Rank is crazy, the Giants stink, they're getting in, and they wound up all the way to the Super Bowl winning, and you wound up doing phenomenal.
Yeah, I did really well, and now it's one of those things that now you're locked into that system. Like, you won't change it up, because it worked once, and it's like one of those fluky things to where, like, oh, it happened once, and that's what I'll just do from here on out, because last year, I don't even remember the team that I picked, but I picked the wrong team. I think I went with a team that lost in the first round, or at least the second round, and it was... it doesn't matter who it was, but I went with that. I'm like, I'm doing it again. And you're like, okay. So then I didn't learn my lesson. I'm like, I'm going all in on the 49ers. It just seems to me, with the way that the NFL playoffs have been working out, like Marcus said, it seems rare that there's two number one seeds in the Super Bowl, maybe even one. It's hard to get one single number one seed into the Super Bowl. So I said, I'll take one of those teams that's playing wild card weekend and just try to roll them all the way through.
Well, and also that's your thing now, too. I mean, you can't ever take a team on a bye. Your thing is picking a team in the first round and shepherding them all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because like Marcus wears a pocket square. He can never not wear a
pocket square. I can never not wear a pocket square now.
So you get locked into that.
It's kind of a burden sometimes. You know? it's hard being that fashionable every day.
You're burdened by a pocket square.
I am. It's the world's heaviest pocket square. I am, you know, it's just, you know, there's a standard that people come to expect when I'm, you know, when I'm on. It's hard. It's such hard work.
There was one day you didn't wear one, and I got tweets like, "What's up with Marcus? He's not good enough to wear a pocket square today." And I said, I noticed that, but I didn't want to call him out on it because I feel, you know, in case there was something going on at home, I didn't want to pry. But it's tough. It's tough. And so now you're right. I will be the guy who has to pick one entire team. And they have to be playing wild card round.
All right, again, for more on Playoff Challenge, NFL.com. You can see Playoff Challenge and go and pick teams. And, hey, you can still get into it right now if you want. You can get in. You can do it against us. Again, NFL.com/Playoff Challenge. Now, some big news this week coaching-wise that's going to affect fantasy for both this year and beyond. And let's start with the big news on Tuesday. Jim Caldwell, the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, a bit of a head-scratcher, you know, to be honest. You know, they were going all in on Ken Whisenhunt, and much like the Bengals for me, he did not come through for them as he's the head coach in Tennessee now. But, Marcus, you look at Jim Caldwell and the reaction of fans at just this guy who got out. They remember him from getting out-coached in the playoffs every time the Colts would play a big game, from the Super Bowl, big playoff game against the Jets when he kept calling timeouts, let the Jets extend their final game-winning drive. Is Jim Caldwell the guy to come in and be the quarterback guru and suddenly Matthew Stafford, his fantasy value goes through the roof again?
Let's put it this way. I have a very good friend who is a Detroit Lions fan. Or at least he was, because as of the hire this morning, he posted his Detroit Lions fan resignation letter on Facebook. I guess, you know, the way I look at it is I think Matthew Stafford will be good for Jim Caldwell. I'm not sure that Jim Caldwell is going to be good for Matthew Stafford from a fantasy perspective. I mean, I think he's going to be a guy who's going to certainly put the ball in Stafford's hands, let him throw it another, you know, 50 times a game. I think in a lot of ways, the offense is going to look the way it has, which is great for 12 weeks out of the season. You know, those last 3 or 4 weeks, who knows? Into the playoffs, if they get there, who knows? I don't know that Jim Caldwell is the guy who's suddenly going to rein in Matt Stafford and make him be a little less reckless in the pocket, because, you know, those 50 throws are fine from a fantasy perspective. He's going to put up 300 yards. He's going to get you, you know, 3 touchdowns, but you always have to worry about the picks. And I just don't know that this is going to be the coaching hire that suddenly means Matt Stafford sees the error of his ways in slinging the ball into double coverage just because Calvin Johnson's in the area.
If I was in that interview for the Lions, I would be like, I'm sorry, Mr. Caldwell, what was your record without Peyton Manning? How well did I mean?
It's Sterling 2-14 there.
My goodness, and maybe it's because Jim Schwartz was just such an animated, just reckless type of, just out of control coach. And they're like, you know what? We want the most stoic coach in NFL history. The guy, the guy who makes Bud Grant look like Jim Harbaugh. We're gonna bring in Jim Caldwell, and that it's surprising to me. I mean, we obviously don't know what's gonna go. We obviously don't know what goes on in those interviews, and it must have went really well for him, and he must have done a great job of breaking down all the plays for Matthew Stafford. And you know what? Sometimes you're better off with a coaching hire that you don't like, because if you think of, like, in recent history, you know, like when Bill Belichick was hired by the Patriots, I don't remember a lot of the Patriots fans going out and celebrating like, oh, the guy who blew it for the Browns is our coach, or anybody. Like, even when Pete Carroll was hired by USC, a lot of people were just kind of throwing their hands up in the air going like, what are they doing? Like, this is the worst hire of all time, and we just fired Paul Hackett. But sometimes these have a way of working themselves out. You know, Jim Caldwell's got some experience. He learned how to win with Peyton Manning. He also learned what its life is like without him. So hopefully he can use all that experience and come in and at least make the Lions fantasy relevant. I don't care what they do in the playoffs. And as a guy who doesn't root for the Lions, I hope they're terrible in the playoffs. But as long as our guys are fantasy relevant again and Matthew Stafford gets a little bit better, then I'm all for it.
I want to tweet that out. Hang on. Adam Rank says Jim Caldwell is Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll combined. There we go. Did I get you right there the last couple minutes?
Wow, they're guaranteed
and
to be
Gandhi.
A conference champion.
You know, remember, you know, we say this about Jim Caldwell, but he's the guy that took Joe Flacco from an maybe every other game type of fantasy starter last year to a guy you couldn't even own this year. So that was, I mean, those are some depths that he took. I just don't see this as being, this is that the guy who's going to come in and suddenly turn Matthew Stafford around. You talk about the attention-grabbing headline. Well, Ken Whisenhunt would be an attention-grabbing headline. Hey, listen to this guy. He's been to the Super Bowl. He revitalized Kurt Warner's career. And now it's Jim Caldwell who people are calling. You know, the Lions right now are calling around the league, what do you think of this guy? And they're all saying, well, I don't know, good luck. And it's, you know, I know he gets the seal of approval from Tony Dungy and a couple other guys, but this is not one of those excite the team, excite the fan base type hires that, hey, and now certain things are going to happen that weren't allowed before.
And I think part of it is that you don't know if Caldwell's the guy, can he take the Lions from mediocre to good? Because he took over that Tony Dungy Colts team that pretty much had everything in place and had been rolling, and they were guaranteed playoff appearances year after year. And even throw out the 2-14 year, because when Peyton you know, was there, the whole stack fell apart. But he went from 14-2 that first year, losing in the Super Bowl, to a 10-6 year the following year. You mentioned the playoff loss to the Jets, which was still head scratching, and he kind of kept stepping backward. And so now you wonder, is he the guy who's going to take a team that really fell on its face in the last month of the season and somehow get them going the right direction? Because I don't know if it's because he's so stoic, if it's because he hasn't really had to build a team on his own, but there's nothing in his resume that gives you the impression that he's the guy to take this thing. There are guys who build programs, and there are guys who are finisher coaches. I don't know which one he is, and he hasn't shown anything to give us a clue of which one he is.
Well, he's not a building coach, because Tony Dungy said, look, he's a great coach to take over an already established team, which I read as, don't ask him to build a team. Don't ask him to draft and make sure this team is good and bring good players in. But if you give him great players, he can give you a good team.
And he's got a pretty good start with Matthew Stafford, Reggie Bush, and Calvin Johnson, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. This was a team that was pretty close to the playoffs, just need a little bit more stability. And maybe it just comes down to just Jim Schwartz was just such a loose cannon that they're like, you know what, we're just going to go for one of the most even-keel guys who's out there, and hopefully that'll turn us around.
Why don't teams, you know, they go from like a loose cannon to a stoic guy, or they go from the guy who's the player's coach to the guy who's really hard on them? Why don't teams just say, you know what, Jim Schwartz was a loose cannon, but he wasn't loose enough. Let's get somebody who's even more crazy.
Somebody crazier.
Let's get somebody crazier.
Carrot
now.
Top will come in
right,
and coach.
Right, you know, something like that. Why don't they just go completely the other direction?
All right, another big coaching move to get to here for a couple minutes. Ken Wisenhunt, now the new head coach in Tennessee, as we talked about, turning down the Detroit Lions, who it seemed like they had zeroed in on him to be their next choice. So now he goes into Tennessee, and you think Ken Wisenhunt, right, and you think Super Bowl and Kurt Warner, but then you realize, okay, he was under 500 a lot of times he was there. He really botched the quarterback position after Kurt Warner retired, and now he moves on to Tennessee, and he's got Jake Locker, who, when healthy, has been really good, but that's been the problem. Jake Locker's not healthy. Can you trust Wisenhunt to turn Locker and some of the other guys into big fantasy players?
I don't think that you can. You nailed it right on the head with that introduction right there. It's like, what has he really done? Like, look at all the quarterbacks who went through Arizona, guys like John Skelton, Max Hall, some of the other curtain jerkers and mid-card jobbers that he was bringing in there. Wasn't doing very well, and it really wasn't until Matt Leinart got hurt in Arizona that he had to eventually go with Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner was like a two-minute drill quarterback until Matt Leinart got hurt, and then he had to go with Warner, and of course Warner played great, and they had that nice run and everything. And so I'm just not gonna absolutely assume that Ken Wisenhunt's gonna turn this program around, and I'm not even gonna assume that Jake Locker is gonna be the quarterback next year. Now, I know a lot of people have said, and even our own Chris Wessling, who writes for the Around the League blog and is on that podcast, talked about like, oh, this is great for Jake Locker. It's like, well, what guarantee is there that they're just not going to go out and draft another quarterback here when it comes in? And if they go in another direction, if they go for one of the guys coming out in the draft, and we'll talk about more of those guys in a moment, but he might just go get his own quarterback and go that direction. So, again, he was the highest prize, I guess, of all these coaches. That there just didn't seem to be a lot of great coaching candidates out there.
No, and that's the big thing to me is that you only have to change coaches when two things happen. When you absolutely have to, in a Greg Schiano situation, you lose the team and things are crazy and we got to move another direction. Or when the guy you want, you know, is better than the guy you're replacing. Like, if there was a Chip Kelly this year, I get that people want to run, you know, knock down his door. Here's a guy with a great offense. Can it translate? He's an itch we kind of have to scratch. We got to go after Chip Kelly. But it wasn't. It was just a bunch of guys who had been head coaches before and guys who had been around. And so I look at, like, Jim Schwartz, and was Jim Schwartz really worse than bringing in Jim Caldwell? I mean, they played well. You know, they collapsed the end of the year, but he had them playing well. You know, obviously, we talked about Schiano and Lovie Smith coming in there because they had to do it, but I just look at a lot of teams and they go, okay, we need a new guy in there, but it's not like there's a lot of guys out there you can say, well, we can plug in and just put them right in. They're going to be great.
Yeah, that's why I kind of commend the Jets for sticking with Rex Ryan, because you look, who are the Jets going to go out and attract? Who are those hot names out there? There's not even a lot of good coordinators, because a lot of times when some of these teams are starting to rise up, you start hearing about the coordinators and you think like, okay, this is a guy who's on the rise. He's up and good. There's really nobody out there, maybe except for the Broncos offensive coordinator, who really seems like a hot name, like, we got to go get this guy. Like, Mike Zimmer's going around doing all the interviews right now, and he's kind of like, all right, well, there's a lot of people who think he's a nice guy, who he could be a coach, and somebody will probably give him a chance at some point. But there's not a knock-your-socks-off kind of guy. So I would probably have just stayed. And a lot of the – I would have stayed with Munchak. I would have stayed – Schwartz is a different one. That one's tough, but – I mean, now you're starting to wonder. You're like, is North Turner going to be a coach again? are we coming down to that?
Him and Marty Schottenheimer will both get jobs.
Marty Schottenheimer would walk into Detroit right now and make that team 9-7 or 10-6. Would they go far in the playoffs? Probably not. But he would bring stability to that program. He would give them instant credibility, and then probably not much else. Kind of like Andy Reid. Andy Reid's that way. He's this generation's version of Marty Schottenheimer. You put him on any team, I don't care how bad they are, that team's going to the playoffs. Will they win in the playoffs? No. But at least they're going to the playoffs. And for Detroit, that would be a step up.
Yeah, especially there's certain teams where you're always thinking, okay, like a 49ers or a Cowboys or a Packers, you're thinking, okay, making the playoffs is great, but we have higher goals. But then you get teams, and even, you know, throw the Bengals in there, where it's just, hey, just get us to the playoffs, man. That's all I really care about. If you take us to the playoffs for 10 years and don't win, okay, I'll deal with the being upset about that, but just get us there, because we're just dying for a drink of water.
Seriously, Cincinnati, you're not even selling out your playoff game, so you don't have any reason to complain.
All right, let's move on now to some
I'm
of the
sorry, that was a weird nod, but that's just, I don't know. I always felt that was the weirdest story to me. L.A. is a bad sports town, mm-hmm. And then there's all, let me tell you something. The L.A. Kings and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks sell out their buildings all the time. The Clippers sell out. The Lakers are having a dismal season, still sell out. Dodgers, Angels both draw 3 million fans. USC gets 75,000 fans a game. UCLA gets around 60. And that's a bad sports town. There's other sports towns out there that can't even sell out a playoff game.
No.
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Well, looking at you.
And nobody's better front runners than Los Angeles. Just give us a cause to get behind for a couple of months, and we'll get behind it with everything we have.
Shouldn't you be a front runner? Isn't that the way to go?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Like, all these guys always talk about, like, it's a business. It's a business. Like, Roddy White or somebody, I just saw him walking through the hall, so his name comes to mind. He would happily, if he gets cut by the Falcons, he's not going to be like, you know what, I'm done because I don't want to be disloyal to the Falcons. No, he would go sign with the Chargers. Why should fans not be the same way? Like, look, you guys aren't going to win. I'm moving on.
Let me tweet that out. Adam Rank exclusive. Roddy White, cut by Falcons, signs with Chargers. You are breaking all kinds of news today.
I'm going to throw that out to him because he's going to join us on the Dave Damashek football program this week. I think I'm going to sell him. Be like, you know what? The run in Atlanta has been nice. Let's move on. Let's find greener pastures.
Wow.
Could you imagine that, though? Roddy White and Keenan Allen on the same roster?
Ooh, that'd be nice.
That'd be kind of nice, right?
Can you imagine Arthur Blank and two really big guys at Adam Rank's door at 5 o'clock in the morning on Friday? Mr. Rank, I'd like to take you for a ride in the car.
Speaking of which, that reminds me, the dearth of available head coaching candidates, that Bobby Petrino landed another job as a head coach.
Oh, hey, sure. He may be a jerk, but he wins.
He won there.
He wins.
Yeah, Louisville's like, yeah, whatever. Like, yeah, we know you've bend a few of the rules, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Join us.
It's like Pam Anderson. She marries her husband, then realizes, okay, it's not working out. They had some good times, gets divorced, dates a bunch of other people all around, and then decides, no, you know what, that wasn't that bad the first time around, and remarries her ex-husband like she did the other day. And yeah, it's exactly what Louisville did. They looked around and said, oh, boy, we're in trouble. You know, we lost Charlie Strong, and that was pretty fast. We didn't expect that, so who else are we going to grab? Hey, the guy that went to BCS games and lost 4 games in 4 years.
Right. Wait, did Pam Anderson remarry Kid Rock?
No, the other guy.
Brett Michaels?
Rick Solomon? No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Tommy Lee,
No. None of the interesting guys.
Scott Baio?
No.
That
would
be great.
Was she married to Scott Baio? I don't think she married Scott Baio. I don't think she loved Chachi.
Scott Baio story?
Like that.
Scott Baio story?
Please.
In a mall in Sherman Oaks. This is about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was in Abercrombie & Fitch with my mom. And I was in the back and I was looking at some stuff and my mom found something for me. And in the front of the store, she, you know, my mom, typical, she yells, Jason! And like all the way in the front of the store. And I look and I see her and she's waving something to me. And in between the two of us is Scott Baio. And he's looking through clothes. And I go, oh, wow, that's Scott Baio. That's pretty cool. And my mom comes walking towards me and she just doesn't see him, bumps into him and knocks him into the rack of clothes.
No.
He knocks a whole bunch of stuff down. And he gets up and goes, hey! And my mom just kept going. To New York, she just kept going. I'm like, And she comes up and says, Mom, you just knocked over Scott Baio. She goes, what? And, like, I told her something she couldn't even copyright. I go, you just knocked over Scott Baio. He walked by, you bumped into him, and he fell into a rack of clothes. And she says, what? Well, here, I brought these shorts for you. And, like, just completely right past it. So if Scott Baio is listening, that's who knocked you over 10 years ago in Abercrombie and Fitch.
He's a huge listener.
Well, that's good. Well, people listen, you know, people listen to different
You'd
things all
surprised.
The time.
You'd be
surprised. Scott Baio?
Yeah.
All right, nice.
I wouldn't be surprised. Tweet us, Scott Baio, just so we can have a confirmation.
You think he's on Twitter, Scott Baio?
Oh, I'm sure Scott Baio's on Twitter.
Is he at Chachi?
I would hope not. He would be at Charles, actually, wouldn't he?
Wow, yeah, there's a generation of kids that only know him as Charles.
What is this? Would you stop? Oh, look who's... You're starting to get the black tag.
We got a visit from Porkins on this show.
My gosh.
All right, that the dulcet tones of our producer Christian Glenn.
But what would you do? Like, would you go Chachi is a No, hold on, don't get all upset. Chachi is a pretty iconic role, but you had a TV show named after your character. So you're the lead
also
character.
Joey loves Chachi though too. Mm. Which didn't
yeah, that
last
was only
very
on
long.
For like a
That's
season.
That's a spin-off. It's this true. Is one that somebody's like, we're going to make Not only are we going to write a show for you, you can bring along your buddy Willie Ames. Like, that's pretty impressive.
This is true.
All right. So tweet us at NFL Fantasy. Is Scott Baio Chachi or is he Charles in Charge? Because that's really been it. And that's been, you talk about nothing.
It's been a while.
That's been a long time. All right. Now, some other players here to get to that just got eliminated this past week. And something we do in the podcast every week is spend some time on some of the players who got knocked out and see what their value is for next season. Ryan Matthews. And he's someone who everybody finally this year said, that's it. I'm done with Ryan Matthews. And surprise, surprise, this is when he decided, hey, I'm going to start playing and have a pretty good season. So Marcus, he had a great year. He played just on first and second downs, and he still was able to put up a really good season. In fact, he was a low end number one end of the season. Now, Ken Whisenhunt gone, so it's going to be, but still Mike McCoy, the head coach there, and still going to be the same type of offense there. You believing again in Ryan Matthews for next year?
I am. I mean, I believe him as a number two running back, maybe at the best, but I do believe in Ryan Matthews because he curbed this year the two things that had held him back, and that was one, his inability to stay on the field. He just couldn't stay healthy, and two, his inability to hold on to the football. He didn't fumble nearly as much this year. He stayed healthy, and he looked like the guy the Chargers thought they were drafting out of Fresno State. I mean, he is a guy, and I think it was Mike Mayock, actually, who said this, who has small back ability and a big back body. Because he's kind of a bigger, stronger guy, but he can be shifty. He can be fast. I really like what he can do when he's healthy, and I think he has figured out that he was starting to run out of chances in the National Football League, especially to be a lead running back, and I think he's going to get a lot of chances next year.
Yeah, I hope he stays in San Diego because the offense that he's running there fits him. He's a great complement to Danny Woodhead and everything they're doing with Phillip Rivers. A lot of continuity there. And if he went to another team, I would be a little hesitant because a lot of times you see these big backs, or just running backs in general, just switch teams. It doesn't always translate, like Steven Jackson this year. You know, although the San Diego Charger running backs have always seemed to do pretty well on their next location.
Stop, yeah.
Darren Sproles goes to
Michael
New Orleans
Turner.
As well. Michael Turner did well. So scratch everything I just said. I'm all in, especially if Ryan Matthews leaves.
All right. Are you part way or are you in at all on Trent Richardson?
No, done. Won't even. No, because there's some things where you talk about like how the Bengals are on your never again list.
Yeah.
Trent Richardson will be in a never again list. It's just one of those. You can't do it. He ruined my team and my league of record. And I'll never trust him again. Sometimes there's just things that are unforgivable. You know, it's like going out with my ex-girlfriend or doing whatever, dating my sister. It doesn't matter. Once you cross that, you make that choice. You cross that threshold. So if you ruin my chances in my league of record, then you're done forever.
Wait, you were going to say dating your sister right there. You don't want to, you want anybody to date your sister?
No. I don't know.
You don't want her to be happy? She's going to want to date somebody.
I know. She can be happy and everything.
But on my terms. She'll be happy on my terms.
But just not with a significant other or kids or general happiness.
Nope. Can't do that.
I want my sister in an apartment by herself with a bunch of cats.
I cannot. Okay, fine. It can't be one of my friends, though.
Oh, okay. Well, that I understand. You were just going to say dating my sister, and I just thought it was anybody dating your sister.
Well, no. It's like if one of my friends wanted to date my sister, I'd be like, nah, not cool with that.
Or the worst thing would be if Trent Richardson was dating your sister. That's like a double no.
Well, that would be really weird because that's really not the team she plays for. But so it'd be really strange. But other than that, yes, it would be weird.
All right. Now, Cam Newton said, you saw the Panthers say earlier this week that he's done everything he can to be the franchise quarterback in Carolina. I didn't know that we've still had to worry about that. He's playing very well. To me, he's still going to be the high draft pick next year. If he gets some help, though, and you saw that was the crying thing that stood out for me from this game this past weekend, was they get on the goal line on 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, inside the 5, and it's where are they going to go with the football? Well, unless he's going to take it himself, which, you know, the Niners know that play is coming. Mm-hmm. They can't throw it to Steve Smith. You can't trust Brandon LaFell. Greg Olsen's not a Jimmy Graham. You can't trust any of the pedestrian running backs. He really needs help. If they go out and get him help, he moves up big time for me rankings-wise. But if they go into next season and it's going to be another year of Steve Smith and LaFell and this running attack, I mean, his value's going to sit where it is, I think.
It probably is. I mean, I think he is a top 5 fantasy quarterback. I think he'll be one of the first 5 off the board. I don't know that he jumps into that, you know, holy fantasy trinity right now. You know, I think you're still looking at Breeze, Rodgers, and, you know, Peyton Manning probably in that group. But, you know, I like what Cam Newton can offer. I think he definitely needs some help at the wide receiver spot. Eventually, they've got to start thinking about a line of succession for Steve Smith, who's been doing this forever. He can't keep going much longer. Brandon LaFell, I don't think, is anything better than a number 2 receiver on any team that he goes to. Ted Ginn will continue to do Ted Ginn things, which means drop the football whenever he's wide open. They've got to find somebody. Maybe it's in this draft. Maybe it's through free agency. I'm not sure. But they've got to add somebody. If they can do that and they have another legitimate weapon on the other side of Steve Smith, that helps Cam Newton just immensely, because he's a guy – that's one of the things I took away from the game on Sunday, is that when Cam Newton gets hot, nobody – I mean, it's like a jump shooter who just is unconscious. I mean, he was making throws early in that game that were unreal. That touchdown pass he threw to Steve Smith was incredible. Terrell Brown couldn't have covered any better than that, and he dropped it right in the bucket. But they've got to have somebody that's a consistent threat to open defenses up, to stretch the field a little bit on the other side, and that will do wonders for Cam Newton.
They need an upgrade in their personnel department, because it seems like they've tried very hard to draft receivers to go alongside of Steve Smith, guys like Brandon LaFell, Dwayne Jarrett a couple of years ago. Just haven't been able to find the guy, and I'm not confident that they'll be able to find him this time either.
Well, there's a lot that's the funny thing, and the next thing we're going to talk about here is there's a lot of guys, a lot of wide receivers, very deep draft when it comes to quarterbacks, wide receivers this season. And let's move into there now, because this week, NFL.com, we have our first mock drafts are out. Guys like Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, seeing where guys are going to go, 1 through 10, and a lot of interesting names on this list. And let's start with the quarterbacks. Johnny Manziel is going to be on everybody's lips the entire offseason. He's going to wind up being a top 5 pick. By the time you just see with him right now, people are saying, you see the expert, well, he's a mid-first round pick. But you know his skill set. He's going to be one of those risers. He'll be a top 5 pick. I think he'll wind up going number 1 when it's all said and done, because whoever winds up picking number 1, whether it's the Texans or somebody else, it's too hard to turn your back and say on this guy's talent and say, okay, I like Teddy Bridgewater, but Johnny Manziel could be that one once-in-a-lifetime guy. Is Manziel someone that you'd look at ranks, depending how things go in the offseason, and go, I can target him as one of my quarterbacks next year?
Not as my starter, but I'd like to have him on my team, feeling he could come out and have a pretty good rookie season. I look at Cleveland. Cleveland has to draft him. There's nobody that Cleveland can draft in this position and have it work out well for them. Because if they drafted anybody, if they said, oh, you know, we'll do the right thing, we'll go for Jake Matthews, or we'll take one of the receivers or something like that, and Johnny Manziel goes to number 5 at the Raiders and he does well, Cleveland, it's been bad for them for a long time sports-wise. It would be even worse to pass on this guy. And the funny thing is they're going to have to end up moving up to number 2. St. Louis is in a great spot because they have another bounty of picks, and then somebody's going to have to trade up into that number 2 spot to take Johnny Manziel. I still feel that Bridgewater will go number 1 overall, because I just feel like I would like to see the Texans go defense, but I just feel like they're just going to end up going for the quarterback. They're going to play it safe. They're going to go for Bridgewater. But Johnny Manziel, I like him a lot. I think it'd be great. I think it'd be great on Cleveland. I feel that he could, when the play breaks down, the way he extends plays, you give Josh Gordon 6 seconds to run around, he'll find him, and he'll make some pretty big plays.
How bad would it be for St. Louis if they trade down and they give up the draft pick that becomes RG3, and they turn around a couple of years later, trade down again, and give up the pick that would become Johnny Manziel.
And there's Sam Bradford.
And Sam Bradford is still kind of
a lot of confidence in Sam Bradford.
You know, how tough would that be in St. Louis?
We're paying him $50 million. He's going to see the end of that contract.
Or Los Angeles.
Or the soon to be the once in future Los Angeles Rams.
Well, I think you're right about Cleveland. Look, they had a chance, as you talked about, to move up and get RG3, and they were hesitant because they didn't want to realize they didn't want to give up what, you know, Washington had to give up to move up there. Now they saw that and they said, okay, we can't let that happen again. Mm-hmm. Whatever it takes, we got to go up to make sure we get one of these two guys. If Manziel winds up going number one, Teddy Bridgewater would be terrific there as well. But they're going to get a quarterback, and he's going to walk into a situation that's pretty good. Not just because of you have Josh Gordon and Jordan Cameron, but this offense likes to throw the football. You know, their philosophy now, they came in last year, was, look, we're going to sling it. We're going to get rid of Trent Richardson because we don't think he can be a running back. We're not going to give it to him 25 times a game. They're going to throw, no matter who the quarterback was this year, they threw the ball 40 times a game. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's very fun. And they got, like you said, they got Gordon Cameron. They got Julian Edelman. Oh, wait, I'm thinking of my Madden team. I took over the Browns. I've done some great things with Cleveland. And if we could get – although I traded for Nick Foles in that game, so that's a little bit different. But Johnny Football has to go to Cleveland. And I understand he would put on the number two and it would make a lot of people think of Tim Couch. But if Johnny Manziel fails, then it's like, all right, that happens. You know what? You've drafted guys that have bust, that have been a bust before. You can live with that. But passing on a guy who could be one of those next great quarterbacks, a guy like Russell Wilson, or I still have a lot of high hopes for RG3. Somebody who could be as good as those guys, you got to do it.
So you're saying if the Browns draft Johnny Manziel and he turns out to be a bust, it's Manziel's fault. But if they pass on Manziel, then it's the Browns' fault.
Yeah, that's it. My fantasy philosophy.
It is. It's your fantasy philosophy.
Of sticking with your studs. I never thought of it that way until now. That's my... I'm going to go with that philosophy. I think that's a good way to go.
Well, it's more like be able to make sure you can blame somebody else. That was your philosophy, too.
Like this guy. What are you going to do?
Now, what about Bridgewater? Is he someone that, look, Texans take him number one overall? If that happens and looks at, hey, Andre Johnson's going to get Arian Foster coming back and everything, and this could be a big offense, and Bridgewater's a guy that I would have on my team?
I'm less inclined to pick him. I feel they'll play it a little bit safer with him than... I mean, I saw the success that Case Keenum had, but I don't know. The only rookie quarterback that I would really want, who I'd put at the end of my bench, would be Manziel. The other guys look good. Blake looks pretty good, too, but not Derek Carr. But you know what?
I think the Texans can't draft Derek Carr just on general principle.
What? Oh, they should just pass. They should just go defense.
Just on principle. Like, it doesn't matter how great Derek Carr potentially could be. I just don't know that they could live with another D Carr under center.
They should tease their fans and be like, we're going to go Clowney number one, and then hopefully Derek Carr falls to us in the second round.
And we'll bring back the same offensive line that David Carr had when we drafted him back in 2003. All right, how about some wide receivers? Because, Frank, you've been talking up Mike Evans a lot over the last couple months. There's a couple of spots you like for Mike Evans, but now – after the big bowl game, Sammy Watkins suddenly, right, he's a guy that's jumped into the top five, and it's, okay, Mike Evans is good, but wow, Sammy Watkins is phenomenal.
No. Sammy Watkins looked so impressive in their bowl game. He was fantastic in all the routes. He just looked like he was running at a different speed, and I know once he gets to the NFL level, he will be a similar speed to a lot of those guys, but he just looked so much better than everybody else on the field. It was really eye-opening, and you're right, this guy is going to be a top five pick. I actually expect him to go to Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville has so many holes. The quarterback class is deep enough to where they could find a guy into the second round that they'll be in that spot, and you'll think of it, they just got to go with the playmaker. That's what Jacksonville really needs, is they need some more of those playmaker guys, and whatever happens with MJD, if he's able to rebound after having an injury-plagued season, Cecil Shorts, if he's able to come back from his injuries. But adding a guy like Sammy Watkins could really turn that team around. It makes your mid-card quarterback that much better when you have somebody who the defenses have to respect. And, you know, and if Blackman ever returns, to who knows? But
that's three pretty talented guys on the outside.
Yeah, and you're looking at a pretty solid team.
I would really be interested to see maybe if a team like the Lions tries to move up and get a guy like Sammy Watkins.
In the first round,
like
the Lions take a wide receiver? Really? That would be awesome.
I mean,
huh?
I know there's the karma of doing that, but you know what? I'm going to say this. They need somebody to put on the other side of Calvin Johnson. Why not go after that? You've got the quarterback in place. You've got the running back situation pretty much squared away. You've got one wide receiver who, for as great as he's been, at some point he's going to start to need help. Why not get a guy like Sammy Watkins? You know you're going to line up and throw the ball 50 times a game anyway. Why not get a guy that can finally open the things up? You know, they thought Ryan Broyles could be that guy. He just hasn't really been able to stay healthy. They thought Titus Young was going to be that guy, and he imploded. Why not put Sammy Watkins over there? That'd be really interesting.
I just want that for the storyline, that the Lions are going to take a receiver in the first round. Sure, why not? I mean, you can go to Bleacher Report, and they go, here are the top 10 wide receiver Lions busts of all time. Here's Charles Rogers. Here's Mike Williams. You go all the way down the road.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that would be that's the worst thing. They cannot even look at a wide receiver in the first round, at least for probably another decade. Because somebody's going to look at that and be like, no. Although, you know what? You were talking about Mike Evans. That'd be a pretty decent guy for the Lions to have opposite of Calvin Johnson. You'd have the two guys being so huge because Mike Evans is a 6'5 receiver, Texas A&M. Pretty good. I like him as a prospect. I think he's really good. You look at a lot of the teams he could go to. You look at the Lions, he'd be excellent outside of or opposite of Calvin Johnson. If he went to a team like the Ravens and kind of picked up where Anquan Boldin left off when he was moved to San Francisco this season. So he'd be a nice fit right there, too. And there's a lot of teams that could use that big-bodied guy. You know, even San Diego, for as good as Keenan Allen was this year, and he was excellent, they still need more playmakers on that team. It was so evident against the Broncos in the divisional round of the playoffs that once Ryan Matthews, and it was admirable, he gave it a go. He tried to play with a high ankle sprain. You think of the injuries that really harangue NFL players, and that high ankle sprain gets mentioned as one of the worst. It's just one you can't shake. The fact that he even went out and tried showed me that was pretty admirable. I really enjoyed that. But once he went out of the game and they had to go with Ronnie Brown, you're like, gosh, this team just doesn't have the playmakers. They need one more guy. And if Mike Evans fell that far, you'd be like, you know, that's an interesting spot. Pittsburgh would be an interesting spot. There's like a lot of St. Louis. St. Louis would be another, like if they move down a little bit, there's another spot where you have him, you have Tavon Austin, so you have the big guy to go with the small guy, and then then Sam Bradford's would be running out of excuses. It seems like St. Louis is going to draft a ton of guys and blow them all, but, you know, because it seems like they've had 14 first round picks over the last 4 years, and then their team's still 7-9 year in, year out.
Yeah, well, at least you could say they were 7-9 with Kellen Clemens. Because they start until Bradford got hurt, he was putting up really good numbers. They won a few games, and you thought, okay, this could be a 9-7 type season for the Rams. Finally, a breakthrough in the investment they put in Sam Bradford. Mm-hmm. Then he got hurt, and now you're at a tough spot. I know the Rams have said, look, Sam Bradford's our guy, but I would sit here in number two and say, okay, hang on a second. If we can get Johnny Manziel, if we trade Bradford, somebody's going to take him. Because there's no other free agent quarterbacks out there this year. Cutler was going to be the guy, re-signed with the Bears. So there's not even Alex Smith out there like there was last year. So if you need a quarterback, Bradford's the only guy. We'll trade him to you. You give us a second-round pick, and someone's going to say, I believe in Bradford. They go back to where he was drafted and thinking number one overall pick. He was on the verge of a breakthrough season this year. And you could get something for Bradford. I think after 4 years, you know, plus with St. Louis, you keep turning your back on a quarterback for a guy that really hasn't proven 100% that, yeah, he's going to be worth that investment.
Yeah, I just have a hard time thinking that when draft day comes around, the Rams are still sitting in that number two slot. Because they really only have two options. You either draft a quarterback, and, you know, probably Manziel, or you trade down. Because you look at what they have. I mean, defensively, the Rams are pretty well set. They don't really have a lot that they need to do on the defensive side of the football. There are no running backs that you're certainly going to take that early. There's nobody at the receiver spot. I mean, there aren't a lot of choices for them there. So either they are looking at taking a quarterback, or they're going to at least throw up the smoke screen to try and get as many trade offers as possible, or they move out of that slot. I mean, I think it's just that simple for them.
You know what also to consider there, too, is that St. Louis needs a new – or they don't need a new stadium. They want a new stadium. They're trying to get one from the taxpayers. They could be a candidate to move back to Los Angeles. They could move to the suburbs of St. Louis. But the bottom line is they need people in the stands. And what's going to bring people out than having a guy like Johnny Football come in? That would revitalize your franchise, make you guys hip again. And Sam Bradford's nice, but like you said, you could probably trade him. There'd be a team that would take him. And then just go with the guy. You know what? Be like, look, this is our last chance to make it work in St. Louis. Because if things keep going the way they've been going, that team's going to be probably leaving, packing up, moving on. So why not take a shot on a guy like Johnny Football?
Yeah, and also you're looking at a division where it's not just where, hey, we're looking for our best way to build a team to win. Is you're looking up at two teams and now three teams. You know, the Cardinals, who knows how they're going to go next year. Carson Palmer getting older. But the 49ers and the Seahawks aren't going anywhere. You know, they've been able to capture a lot of talent and keep guys for a long period of time. So you're looking up at these guys. You got to find a way to cut through and make your team relevant, but for there to be a reason for people to be interested and not just every year go, yeah, well, the best we could do is finish third.
And you know what is interesting there is that Kaepernick and Russell Wilson will not be making big money for a long time because they're still under their rookie contracts, whereas St. Louis is hampered by Sam Bradford's big contract, to which doesn't allow them to go out and add a lot of big-name pieces. Like, Seattle just keeps getting all these great guys on defense because they've got the cap room because Russell Wilson doesn't make a quarterback salary. You know, he's a top 10 quarterback, but he's not drawing that salary.
He gets $25 a day and meal money.
Pretty much.
You're not really paying a lot to him.
That's pretty close.
All right, now, speaking of Russell Wilson and company, let's finish up the podcast here, give our picks for this weekend as my chair falls to the floor again. I hate that when you sit on a chair and your chair goes all the way to the ground, you just feel like less of a man.
A little bit.
Like, I just did that, and I feel very embarrassed. But all right, let's.
And nobody would have known that had you not brought it up right now.
But the thing is, you two guys did, and so did Christian, so I kind of had to say it. Because okay. You would have walked out and said, did you see what happened?
You see when Jason's chair fell late in the...
Well, now you took that away from me. What are Marcus and I going to talk about for the rest of the afternoon?
Your tweets that we just threw out there about, you know, Roddy White getting cut and all those things that are happening.
And I gave Manziel to St. Louis.
Right, exactly. And
a lot of breaking news here.
Jim Caldwell, the next Bill Belichick. Actually, and Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll combined.
Pete Carroll, USC. Well, I guess he's been pretty good,
in Seattle.
He would have the most down-the-middle coach in the world if you combined Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll. He would just be a regular guy. Because Pete Carroll is so over the top and Bill Belichick is so buttoned down, you'd have a regular guy.
Pete Carroll is like a really excited Labrador, right? And he's like, he's hopping around, he wants to go play, he wants like you to throw the ball so he can go get it. Meanwhile, Belichick is kind of that older dog who's just like, look, man.
He's chilling.
Seriously, like, I just want some food. Let me hear. Watch TV.
I had a dog like that. She was a German Shepherd. And if somebody would knock at the door, she'd look at me like, "You want me to go? Do I need to go?"
Really?
And I'd look at her and be like, "Really?" And she'd be like, she'd give me that look like, "Are you serious? Fine." She'd get up. And then one time, I'm not kidding you. She's sitting on the couch. She barely moves and barks. And I go, and I look at her, and I'm like, really? That's what you're doing? And then you get to see her shoulders slump, like, oh, fine, I'll get up. Gotta earn my food.
All right, let's pick the games this weekend, Rank. Who's playing in the Super Bowl?
I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers. They've been one of the hottest teams in the NFL. What it basically comes down to for me, and I've said this for the last couple of weeks, is that their skill receivers match up so much better than Seattle's. If you look at it, they've got Crabtree, Bolden, Vernon Davis, and the Seahawks don't really have a playmaking receiver. They have Percy Harvin's fine, but you know what? He's really not 100%. He's spent the whole offseason or spent the whole season trying to get back to this point. So that gives them a little bit of an edge right there, I feel, especially with Kaepernick. He's played so much better since Michael Crabtree has returned. So I like them. And at the beginning of the season, I picked the New England Patriots to represent the AFC. I'll continue with them. The Broncos have a couple of injuries on defense, which could be huge. I know a lot of people are going to look at this game and they're going to say, you know what? LeGarrette Blount, 4 rushing touchdowns. The Patriots are going to come out and pound them again. And yet, that's the Belichick way, is that he always finds a way to expose your weakness. He'll be like, look, you find who Quentin Jammer's guarding every play, and you go after him. That's the only guy I want you to target. And you know what? I like the way that he just finds a way to beat you. Because it was two years ago, he started running that 2 tight end set with Gronkowski and Hernandez and kind of revolutionized the way teams play offense. And then he lost both those guys this year, and now he's completely changed it with almost a new roster, it seems like. Tom Brady being the only constant guy there, and he just finds a way to continue to win. So I'm going to like them to go to the Super Bowl And at that point, you look at Tom Brady and you're like, he might be the best of all time. If that happens, if he gets to one more Super Bowl, he's now got a legitimate argument against Joe Montana as the greatest of all time. If he wins a Super Bowl, the argument is over.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you talk about Belichick is that he's made a career of, look, just when I show you something, okay, well, now we got to prepare for that. He'll give them something completely different this weekend in Denver. It's not going to be LeGarrette Blount. It's not going to be giving him the football all the time. It's going to be something that Denver's not prepared for because that's what he does. I'll show you something, and you think you have it, and we're like, meanwhile, we've so moved past that. You know, you see that especially in the AFC East when they play teams like when they play the Jets, they play the Bills, they play the Dolphins. It's, you know, the first game of the season. Oh, maybe it's a close game. We saw New England like to do this, so we're going to prepare for that next time around. And then second game around, New England wins 34-7 because they're showing you stuff that you didn't prepare for because it was just something that was brand new they did that week.
He's like the guy who listens to the indie band before everybody else, and by the time you catch on to him, he's like, oh, yeah, I don't listen to them anymore.
Yeah, I'm done with us. I don't listen to them. Yeah.
Shane,
sellouts.
Shane Vereen will have 15 receptions this weekend or something crazy.
And Stephen Ridley goes for 125 yards.
Start Shane Vereen as your running back this week. If you have LeGarrette Blount, bench him and go with Shane Vereen.
All right, Marcus, who's your pick?
I'm going to start in the AFC. I think that Peyton, forget all the stuff about, you know, hearing about, you know, how he can't do it or whatever. I just watching him on Sunday in a divisional game against the Chargers for – everybody who talks about how smart he is and how cerebral he is, I really felt like, you know, it was almost like a heavyweight fighter going into a fight that chances are he's going to win, but he knows he may have problems. I felt like the Broncos just all of a sudden decided they were going to come out, we're going to fight this fight left-handed because we're not sure how we're going to beat you. Your style has flummoxed us before, so we're going to do something completely different. And I just felt like they just turned around and then just fought southpaw, and that's how they won that game. And I thought we saw Peyton at his most cerebral as a quarterback this past week, and I think you're going to see a lot more of that. I mean, this is kind of the ultimate chess match where it's Peyton against Bill Belichick and trying to figure out how they're going to slow him down, and Peyton's going to find a way to have a response. And I think it may not even be that he goes out and has one of those Peyton Manning games. I don't think he's going to go out and throw for 300 yards. I don't think he's going to have a ton of touchdowns. But I think he will do enough to keep that defense off balance. I think a guy that you may have to watch this week is Monte Ball. I have no idea what he calls himself now. But he may end up seeing a big role in this football game. And I think you find a way that the Broncos will pull this thing out. It may come down to the end. It may be that Peyton has to put together another 4-minute drive like they did to kill the clock against the Chargers, but I think they find a way to get it done, and Peyton gets back to the Super Bowl. On the other side, I've been so torn over this NFC game because, you know, midway through the season, it looked like if you had to go to Seattle, you didn't have a shot. But the Niners have played really well, and I feel like if there's any team right now that could knock the Seahawks off their pins in Seattle, it is probably the San Francisco 49er team. They're as healthy as they've ever been. They're playing well, and they really do seem to like to hold things back for Colin Kaepernick from a play-calling standpoint until the postseason. But that being said, I've kind of gone all in on Seattle, so I'm going to stay with that. But I do think you know, the Niners will make things difficult, and if they somehow walk out of there with a win, I won't be completely surprised, but I will stick by my pick of the Seattle Seahawks.
All right, there we go. There's the picks for this weekend's game.
Did you make your picks?
Oh, no, I didn't. I was going to let you guys make your picks.
I picked
the Bengals to go to the Super Bowl. Do I still get to pick one?
That notwithstanding, please.
Well, I'm gonna go New England, San Francisco. I look at Denver, and I see Peyton Manning and I see Denver and Seattle, both as teams that are kind of hanging on right now. They both look gettable. Peyton Manning's not throwing the ball downfield like he was earlier this season. You look at a lot of the stuff that gets big plays. It's a lot of bunch-type formations, and we're going to throw the ball 10 yards downfield or right off the line of scrimmage to Demaryius Thomas. He's not stretching the defense a lot, whether it's his arm is worn down from the season or he could talk about the cold all he wants, but, you know, trying to throw the football in the cold with a glove is a tough thing to do. So I just don't see Denver as a team that is ready to play their best football. I think they've played their best football and they've peaked, whereas New England is peaking now. Same thing in the NFC. If Harvin was healthy, it's a different dimension to the Seahawks, but they're not. This is not an overmatched Saints team coming in like we were last week, and still it came down to the end. This is the best team they've played. San Francisco's a different team when they played them the first time around. I know people pay attention to the Crabtree effect, and he's playing now, and Kaepernick's playing better, but this is just a different feel, a different Niner team, and they've won 45 games in a row, and they're playing with a lot of confidence. It's going to be close, but I like San Francisco to win this game. I know it's tough to say two visiting teams winning in the conference championship games, but
right.
these are the two teams that are playing the best. And if you don't want to get a point where you're not overthinking it, the two teams playing the best will wind up playing for the Super Bowl, and I'll have to sit back for 2 weeks and go, Tom Brady's going to win a Super Bowl in my home stadium. And I got to realize him holding up the Lombardi Trophy in MetLife Stadium and think
and it's also
if there wasn't
be,
anything else worse than that.
It's also going to be his big middle finger to the 49er franchise he loved that that spurned him for Gio Carmazzi.
A lot of storylines.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. Whatever we
and
get.
He would win in Eli's house.
Yeah.
As well.
That would be a big deal. We wouldn't get Omaha, but we would have, at least we'd have that. But you think about it. This is, if you said beginning of the season, all right, throw everything out the window. If you could have any four teams playing in the Final Four for the Super Bowl this year, who would you pick? You would say, well, Brady Manning one more time. Okay, well, taking your rooting interest out of it, you know, if you could say, okay, forget who you root for, but if you could have what's the most interest that you're going to see, you would say Brady Manning one more time for all the marbles, and Seattle-San Francisco, the new great rivalry with two great head coaches that don't like each other, teams that don't like each other, that love to talk smack, that play great defense, that put points on the board. This is the Final Four you would have picked.
Yeah. I think the NFL does a better job of booking than the WWE right now.
You're probably right.
David Stern is jealous.
All right, guys, enjoy the games. We'll be back next week for another edition of NFL Fantasy Live Podcast.